We have a prickly spring.
We all should be.
Okay, we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Representative Clark, have you read the minutes? Are they good? Okay, Representative Clark will move the minutes from the last meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We're going to start out today on 20. Well, before I bring the bill up, just want to make a little statement. We're going to present the bill, probably spend a good 15 minutes in presenting the bill in the best fashion that we can, because the whole construction phase is very complicated. And we, the state of Minnesota, are the owners of the building, so the contractor will have to do what we want them to do in the stages we want them to do that. So a lot of questions as to the how it will be built in what time frame is really for us to decide when it starts, and that would be probably the governor's office or admin. And then we'll spend the 15 minutes talking about presenting the bill, 15 minutes for questions, 20 minutes for discussions, and I want to vote on the bill at 3:30. I'd like to get out of here at 3:30 because of the length of time we're going to spend on the House floor tonight. And I really think an hour is sufficient to make a decision. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when you say vote on the bill at 3:30, does that mean you're sending it out as a separate bill?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, then I would move House File 2754, recommend it to pass, and send it to Ways and Means. And with that, if the commissioner would like to come down. And members, we're going to focus on page 54, which is the numbers for the estimated cost, and pages 15 and 16, because they kind of show how the different phases of the construction will work out. Commissioner, do you want to go first?
Just say a few brief remarks, sure.
Okay. State your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Spencer Kronk, the Commissioner for the Department of Administration. On behalf of the Minnesota State Capital Preservation Commission, I want to thank you for holding today's hearing on the needs of a true state treasure. Since the 80s, there have been numerous efforts and plans to preserve the Capitol building. Many other states that have successfully undertaken capital restorations started by forming a commission. And during last year's legislative session, a commission was created to focus on the preservation of the Capitol building, which consisted of 22 members, including the governor, chief justice, attorney general, and leadership from both the House and the Senate. Chair Howes and Representative Houseman are members of the commission, and Representative Lanning has also been an active participant, and I want to thank them for their service. Today I come before you to speak as yet another member of the commission. This commission has been meeting since October and quickly brought in an outside facilitator, David Hart, to help guide us through the process of developing a comprehensive pre-design plan for preserving the Capitol. The work over the following 5 months resulted in the unanimous approval of a comprehensive master plan, which you have in front of you. As the commission stated in its report to the legislature, the building has reached a tipping point, and a decision must be made whether to renovate it for the next century or take the temporary approach of perpetual repair. Representative Howes' legislation provides the funding in a single appropriation with the allocation as the funds become available. That is an appropriate and a responsible approach to funding this project. This approach will allow the anticipated sequencing of the work to match up with the funding. And I will stand for any questions, and I've also brought with me Wayne Wazlowski, the Senior Director for the Real Estate and Construction Services Division within the Department of Administration.
Mr. Wazlowski, would you like to make a few comments to start with?
Mr. Chair, I just defer to your discretion on what areas you'd like to talk about.
Well, I guess I would like you to go to page 56. I'm sorry, page 54. And that's where the estimates are for the construction costs, and just walk the members through as to why each dollar amount is there, and the architect's estimate as to why these numbers are correct and what variables he might have in them.
Mr. Chair, be happy to do so. For the record, my name is Wayne Wislowski, Director of Real Estate and Construction Services for Department of Administration. The commission, when they hired David Architect, one of the obviously key questions that they had was around cost, potential costs of restoration. And so what they asked him to do was to undertake a benchmarking study of his work to see what it cost other state capitals that have been restored. Some of those examples, Wisconsin, Iowa, Kansas, Texas, Utah, which is the David Hart led the effort in to restore the Utah Capitol. So he compared all those costs and he did some adjustments for the scope as well as when the timing of those projects were completed to adjust for inflation and changes in construction costs. And that through that process, comparing eight other restoration projects for state capitol buildings, he came up with a benchmark of $600 per square foot, and then used that to equate that to this state capitol, resulting in an overall estimate of $241 million. And this provides, on page 54, is a further breakdown of those costs. And what you see is a mixture of hard construction costs, and that's about $142 million of hard construction costs in 2011 dollars. Obviously, that has to be inflated to the midpoint of inflation, as well as then the soft costs that are involved in a project like this, which is all of our design fees, our project management fees, and the other consultants that are involved.
Any questions on that portion? Would you like to go over the letter from Mr. Hart?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. And really what that equates to is maybe a little bit to follow up on your comment on the sequencing of the work and how critical that becomes to the delivery of this project. We've looked at several different options on how would you sequence and phase the work. A key part of this project is obviously the mechanical and electrical systems. And one of the challenges is to minimize the amount of time that the existing tenants would need to be out of the building, as well as when the chambers themselves would need to be closed. And so the delivery method that we'd be looking at for this project is construction management at risk. We've used it on multiple projects. We're using it today on Capitol Building to deliver the repairs to the exterior dome. That allows where we bring that expertise on during the design phase, the construction management expertise, and then as you put together packages, you bid out those separate packages. So that really gets to that question of, do you need all the money up front, or can you phase that funding over periods of time? Using a construction management at risk delivery method, we can phase the work and do that while still being consistent with state requirements.
Mr. Wislowski, as you know, in the bill that I've got presented today, it's 60 million three times and then 41. I'm not necessarily opposed to the 77.4, but with the committee's wishes, I'd like to leave it that way for now, and in Ways and Means make that adjustment. And between now and Ways and Means, if you could bring us a line item of that 77.4, so we know specifically what you're spending that on and when you will spend it. We would also like to, at least I would like to know, when you would hire the CM, when the architects would be hired, when the engineers would be hired. You know, architects and engineers are part of the construction industry. They are jobs. They are things that need to be done before the hard hats can get there. So that would be important.
Mr. Chair, we'll certainly do that. And just a comment on the RFPs for the architect and as well as the construction management firm. We're actually very close to issuing the RFP for the design firm. We expect to do that within the next couple of weeks to have that posted. The construction management RFP, we're just finishing up drafting of that, and within the next 3 weeks we expect to have that published as well, so that should the legislature fund this project, we have the team ready to go as soon as the money's available.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I assume we're working through the spreadsheet on page 54. As you, correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. So then I think this is the right time to ask these questions. Mr. Wasilowski, could you clarify or explain for us a couple items on the spreadsheet? One, the second line for contractor contingency. What is that about, please?
Mr. Wasilowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, when the contractor with a CM at risk delivery method, what the contractor will do, you'll negotiate a guaranteed maximum price with the contractor once you get the design to approximately 90% complete on construction documents. You'll have a negotiated GMP at that point. The construction manager is required to bid out all of the trade work. And what they will do when they're doing their estimating and negotiating, they will include a contingency factor for changes in pricing, and as well as for interpretation of design documents if there was an issue with what they were thinking was required in the design documents. And through that process, all that work gets bid. 100% of the savings underneath the GMP comes back to the city as the owner. So that is really the safeguard, and I think that's probably what the heart of your question is.
All right. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that sounds like a good idea. Would you then turn down being involved in economics makes me want to ask this question about inflation and having the rate 11.79, which is a forecaster, the kind of precision I never give. I would ask what the derivation of that number is, please.
Representative West, well, I mean, Mr. Wasilowski almost promoted you, or demoted you, I guess.
Promotion, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Banyan, the MMB puts out an inflation schedule that they get, and they go out and they work with experts in the industry to forecast what inflation is going to be in the construction industry. In this case, this project is expected to begin. This schedule is based on the project beginning this year and ending in 2017. So they have a midpoint of inflation of 2015. And so that 11% represents the inflation to that midpoint of construction.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that's the midpoint, you said. So that's 2015. So between now and 2015, we would expect that construction costs would go up 11.79%.
Mr. Wasilowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, that's the forecast. And again, how this process works, we're not obligating ourselves to pay that amount. If inflation is less in the construction industry, then we would expect to realize that in our bids and then have those savings come back to the state.
Okay, and Representative Banyan.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then Mr. Wasilowski, what happens if it's more? What happens if you've underestimated that inflation rate?
Mr. Wasilowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Banyan, another good question. There's going to be multiple bid packages in this project, so you would expect through that process that some are going to come in a little bit more, some are going to come in less, and so you would hope that balances out. Part of this process is having some independent cost estimating. It's not just the contractor that's providing the GMP. We'll have a separate independent cost estimate, somebody that's reviewing those numbers to get a high level of comfort that those numbers are accurate. But if in fact it does come in overbid, then you're into the owner's contingency side of the equation, where you have to dedicate some owner's contingency, or you have to reduce the scope in some manner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of questions about the structural integrity of the building in light of, you know, how old the building is, some of its original architecture, and then the central corridor going through it, creating massive vibrations on a daily basis several times a day. And I guess it's more of an engineering question perhaps, but I know that you've had to address that, but I just want to have some comfort level that that's really going to be taken care of, that we're not putting money that's into something that's going to be shaking down in 5 years.
Mr. Wasilowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, thank you for that question. Many members have had concern about potential vibration impacts related to LRT. I would just start with the building itself. Cass Gilbert, when he designed this building, intended it to be around for many, many generations. And so from a structural standpoint, it was built extremely sound. The Met Council, and they had to do this throughout the route, did what they considered pre-construction testing of vibration to get a baseline of vibration. That's just the daily traffic that goes along University Avenue. We had the same thing with next to the lab building off of 12th Street to get a baseline of what's the regular vibration that's occurring. And then they also did a risk assessment to say how vulnerable are buildings that are next to the line to vibration. And then they set a threshold. And what's in place, our agreement with the Met Council is that they will monitor the vibration and that through their contractor, if the thresholds that have been established are exceeded, then they will take actions to mitigate that and to avoid it in the future. Ultimately, it's the Met Council that's responsible for that project, and if they damage any of the structures along if the work along that route damages any of those structures, then that contractor is going to have to be responsible for repairs.
Representative Scott.
And my next question would be, in your experience, maybe with other studying other capital buildings, are any of them situated similarly to a mass transit trains, you know, like ours is going to be, and how have they done?
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott. I will just a comment on the risks associated with vibration. Typically, the study, the experts in this area are looking at vibration-sensitive equipment versus buildings themselves. So you've probably seen some of the headlines with the MPR building as well as the University of Minnesota lab facility. That wasn't the building themselves that they were concerned about. It was the equipment within the building that is potentially vibration sensitive. But to directly answer your question, I'm not aware of any other capitals, and that, not to say that there isn't, but I'm not aware of any other capitals that will have an LRT that runs this close.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one final maybe question or comment is, so let's say that it exceeds the vibration, whatever that threshold is, and the issue there is the taxpayers are going to get stuck with paying the bill to reduce the vibration through the Met Council. So that's kind of a catch-22 as I see it. But
Mr. Wislowski, before you answer that, one of the days with the Governor's Commission on the Capitol, and I was speaking to the architect, and that related to a conversation that Representative Anzelk and I had about the vibration going back by the House chambers. And at that point, Mr. Hart said that he was going to put sensors on the Capitol building to gauge buses and trucks and cars, and then they could equate that and do a ratio and figure out what it would be for a 20-ton train to go rolling by. Is that still in the plans, or are we going to let Met Council decide if the building will stand after we've spent half of the $221 million?
Mr. Chair, right now our agreement with the Met Council is that they're responsible for that monitoring program, and that again, it's their project that they're delivering, so they're obviously responsible for making sure the contractor doesn't damage any buildings or property that's adjacent to the project. That is the, as you know, people that have been following this over the years, the University of Minnesota and as well as MBR spent millions of dollars hiring their own consultants, experts related to vibration, to really get an independent or a second look at whether or not there would be any impacts to their facilities. In this case, that didn't happen. We really were in a position of having to rely on the consultants that the Met Council hired to say, is there a risk to the building? Again, what the agreement we negotiated is they're responsible for monitoring and taking action if thresholds are exceeded. To Representative Scott's point, it really is that, you know, in their contract with their contractor, the contractor's obligated for not exceeding those thresholds and to making sure that adjacent buildings are not damaged. So hopefully through that process, the taxpayers would not be responsible for actions by the contractor.
Representative Woslowski, Mr. Woslowski, before I go to Representative Hausman, you give me a little pause for caution here by saying that the Met Council is responsible. I would hope that the sensors would go on before they start all the construction work coming down University. And if they discover either before or during that the Capitol will not withstand a 20-ton train, that they already have the design for the tracks on rubber cushions or whatever they do in place and ready to go, or they reroute it. And I would hate to have them reroute it after we've spent maybe $50 million in architectural design, et cetera, so maybe before this goes to Ways and Means or to the floor, there might be some language in here that that is done before any contracts can be let for the building. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to weigh in support of that line of questioning that both of you have had. And I mean, I think it's been that ongoing anxiety. And one of the things that's different about this, the university and the Met Council were sort of opponents, representing their interests over against the other. The same with MPR. And I've always been a little concerned about this one because really it was two governor-appointed agencies, your department, which had some obligation, and the Met Council. And I never sensed that they approached it from the perspective of, like, antagonists making the other side prove it. And so I think there, in this case, we have two fairly significant public works projects, the Capitol and the Central Corridor. You know, because I've talked to you about this, I always felt we should never have gone that route. I thought we should have turned at University and Rice and avoided that conflict for a whole bunch of reasons. One being that we snake our way through with sharp right turns and the train will be going 7 miles an hour. But I lost that battle. But this one continues. And what I hear them saying, I mean, after the fact, after damage occurs, I mean, what we hear you saying is the contractor somehow is responsible. But I think most of us would like assurances before the fact that damage will not occur. And that's what I think the chair has asked for before, and I'm not certain if we have ever gotten a clear answer that you've checked it all out, dotted I's, crossed T's, and you can assure us. And that's, I think, what people are looking for.
Mr. Woslowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, and I'll people that have been following this for years know that we've been concerned about this as well. And again, the University of Minnesota, as well as MPR, spent millions of dollars on independent consultants to determine whether or not their lab equipment or their equipment in their building was going to be impacted by vibrations. We didn't have those resources. The legislature did not appropriate us funds to do that. So our only alternative was to go to say to the Met Council and negotiate an agreement with them for them to obviously do the pre-construction background baseline testing as well as the monitoring. The overall goal was to make sure that project does not do damage to the Capitol building. And I can say the Department of Administration is 100% supportive of that goal. I'd also just comment is the negotiations were not easy on our, I think we spent a lot of time, including coming to the legislature, showing what the impacts would be from the LRT. Obviously there's benefits as well, but the Capitol campus is gonna be impacted. You're already seeing some of the street closures and things that are occurring. I would say I think we did our best we could to make sure everybody was aware of what those impacts were going to be.
Representative Halls.
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up with one other point. I don't know if this committee has heard this issue before, but the other issue about that is it's not just the vibration of the train, but it's the fact that that hill is too steep, and we are going to take that hill down. We're going to dig a ditch north of the Capitol. And you will not be able to walk north of the Capitol and cross the street anymore. You'll have to go to the corners because there will have to be a fence built because there's a trench, because the hill is too steep. And so there's complexity. There's a different kind of complexity in that construction when you take away the soil. And I think... as much as I've been involved, I don't think I've ever seen the evidence of testing that's been done about that whole range of issues.
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair and to the members, we understand your point and certainly be happy to work with the chair and others on language that would, between boundaries and means, that would help address your concerns.
Representative Brzezkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wislowski, along with Representative Banyan's question, you talked about the contractor contingency. There's also an owner contingency. Is that similar? Can you expound on that?
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, typical for construction projects is for the owner to carry a contingency. That contingency gets... You typically carry before you start the design phase of a project, carry a larger contingency. As you get more into the design, you're able to get a higher level of comfort on your cost estimate. Obviously, as you get further into the design, you're able to get much more detailed in your cost estimating work. But that is a typical construction thing, just to carry a owner's contingency, and that's to address change orders that may come up. There may be scope changes that come up. There may be, when you're working with an existing structure, there may be hidden conditions that weren't known until you opened up the wall or started doing the roof replacement, those types of things. So that's what an owner's contingency is intended to cover.
Representative Brzezkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wislowski, that's helpful. I'm just curious. We've got these two different contingencies of $23 million of contingencies. Should a portion of those not be used? Can anybody tell me exactly how that money will be returned to the taxpayers?
Mr. Wislowski, you want to tackle that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kowski, you've often seen this, I think, through this committee, where there's balances at the end of projects and then they get onto the cancellation report. So what happens is those funds don't get encumbered and they get on the cancellation report, and then they're canceled. Those appropriations are canceled, whatever the remaining balance is.
Representative Brzezkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wislowski, the swing space, is that I understand there's about $20 million that's the fixtures and other art-related type things. Is that what that is?
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kowski, I appreciate you asking that question. That is actually... we obviously need to move people out of the Capitol building to do the work. And so this is to prepare the spaces that they would move into. We obviously have to make sure they can function during the construction period. $20 million was I don't want to say a plug number, but we don't have exact locations. Until we have the construction management firm on board and know the sequencing and what the space requirements will be, we won't have an exact number for the swing space. So that, I would say, is a placeholder until we know. Examples, we've had conversations with members of the House potentially using the cafeteria in this building as either hearing space or as office, putting workstations in there during construction for swing space. So those are the kind of that remodeling work that's needed to deal with that swing space issue is what's covered in that budget amount. Again, I would say we don't expect that full amount is going to be needed for that purpose.
Representative Brzezkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Wislowski, last question is the security equipment, $1.8 million. Are we going to have metal detectors to disarm people when they come in? Is that what we have here?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kowski, how this process will work, and this isn't a predetermined strategy. There will be a working group, including led by Department of Public Safety, as well as experts, security consultants. They will look at other Capitol buildings and see what they have done. I would say most Capitols have dealt with it through adding cameras versus actually putting in equipment at the entries to the building.
Last question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
And it's related to the last one. So, Mr. Wozlowski, how will that decision be made? Will this Capital Planning Committee make that decision, or how will that happen?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dukowski, as we go through at the start of the designing process, there will be groups that are identified for various issues. So on the security side, there will be, a team that will have working group sessions to figure out what's the right strategy and approach to the security issue. The Capital Preservation Commission, that information will be reviewed with the commission to make that decision. Certainly those that are interested, legislators that are interested, House and Senate are going to be fully part of that process, and we'll have that information before it gets implemented.
Thank you.
Representative Rocopino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wozlowski, kind of help me out here. In 2005, when we were talking about the century and celebration, the price was $4.5 million back in 1905. And if I recall correctly, in 2005 dollars, was that $640 million? Do you know that figure?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, are you referring to the plan that was in place at that time?
The cost of the capital was about $4.5 million in 1905 dollars. What would it be in 2000, well, today's dollars?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that number.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I think when I asked at the time in 2005, it was like $640 million. Now, my second question, because I have to get this out, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, but my understanding is that the Capitol was built and financed with anticipated natural iron ore royalties. Do you know the answer to that question, Mr. Wozlowski?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't.
Representative Rocopino.
Well, I think it's true. Trust me, everybody. Because I think it is true. And that's how it was built, and that's why it's one of the nicest capitals in the country, and Cass Gilbert became famous. And my point being that one building in 1905 that we're discussing today would have eaten up an entire bonding bill. Mm-hmm. In fact, if my numbers are correct, $640 million is about $150 million more than your total bill for one building at the time. And my second point in asking that other question is it was special money that was used to build something the entire state could be proud of and is still proud of 100 years later. It was special dollars. And I think that's what this committee should talk about, is the fact that it was special funding and not be within our bonding bill numbers for the year. That if we're all proud of our Capitol building, we want to make sure that it's fixed up, Mr. Chair, and I know you really do because you've been on this issue for a long time, but I think it behooves all the citizens of the state to find the money to do it on top of the regular bonding bill. And then I guess my last question to you, Mr. Chair, is the way this was set up initially, and I don't know if we have a bill in front of us, but there was going to be money appropriated over several years. And can we bind another legislature? Can we tell the 2014 or 15 legislature that they got to spend money on what we voted on in 2012?
Representative Rocopino, it will be in law that the money will be spent in the sequence that we pass it today. The future legislators can change that sequence take the money away, add to it. If they have the votes, they can do what they want. Representative Rukavina, are you suggesting we should do it the old-fashioned way and use the taconite tax to build the
capital? No, we didn't use, Mr. Chair. There was no such thing. There was there were the ore royalties owned by the state, and the state
I'd be in favor
still
of
has
that.
Iron ore royalties, and a lot of those iron ore royalties go to the general fund, and that's my understanding. And I would like somebody to disprove what I'm saying, and I would like also you to disprove what I said about the actual dollar amount of $4.5 million, what it would be valued at today, because my point being, and it's always been, that, you know, the way some cheapskates are operating around here, we'd be now trying to talk about fixing a Morton building and maybe put a cement floor in it instead of the dirt floor. So that was my only, you know. I'm off on a tangent, Mr. Chair. Forgive me.
You're controlling yourself well, Representative Rukavina. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Waslowski, thank you for being here. A couple of questions. When we did, and this is kind of for the Chair, too, when the I-35 bridge was rebuilt, they had some sort of a, if I remember my news articles correctly, there was some sort of a bonus that was built in for the contractors to get done by a certain time. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's been discussed in this project?
Mr. Waslowski, I don't believe there has, but maybe you have more knowledge on that.
Mr. Chair, members, we've actually looked at having this, what they are in the industry calling an incentive fee. It is essentially it would take both on the construction management side and on the design side, you would have 5% of the negotiated fee that is set aside, and that is on a quarterly basis. There would be reviews of the performance of both the construction management firm as well as the design team to say, is the stakeholders happy with how the work is proceeding? And that stakeholder group would include members, staff, presumably from House and Senate, as well as Governor's office. And that fee would then be awarded to them if they're satisfied with the performance. That fee would be awarded to them on that quarterly basis. But that's something new that Mr. Hart from Utah is recommending that we include. They did include that at the Utah State Capitol, but it's not something that we've had a chance to. We've been evaluating that, but
Representative Fabian, it's very difficult to do that when you're restoring or refurbishing, because you really don't know what you're going to find once you start. Representative Fabian.
I understand that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in regard to that, not knowing what we're going to find and so forth, you know, like on page 50, I'm just looking at the art stuff. I'm kind of an arts guy. I'm serious. We do have some very special treasures here. I found that out. But they're talking at the bottom about the restoration and so forth. And not just that, but throughout the building, the uniqueness of the building and the contractors that are involved in this. I mean, how do we know that we're getting what we're paying for in the long run?
Mr. Waslowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. There be, as part of the evaluation of the team, our fee together, you'll have evaluation criteria. And a lot of that will be based on what's their expertise and what's their experience. I can comment specifically, many of you were around when we restored on the third floor some of the decorative painting that was previously restored. And that really is an artisan that is involved in that work. There's only a few people in the country that can do that type of work. So you really are identifying what's the scope of work, what's the proper expertise and experience that is needed to get that work performed in the manner that you need it. You build that into the evaluation process when you're selecting that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's not just the artwork either. It's the exterior work and all the marble and all that stuff that I'm concerned about. And I assume that it's the same. I'll just accept that answer. Thank you, if that's accurate.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have members. I would just say that how I view it is it took a genius to design the building. This is regarded as one of the best state capitol buildings in the country. I think we need the same level of talent to restore the building.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cost overruns. Who's there again? Who's looking up for the taxpayers on possible cost overruns?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the process that we're going to go through is again, we're going to have independent cost estimating at each step of the design process, so that not only are we getting the contractor's expertise on what are they seeing out in the market for pricing, but we're also going to get independent cost estimates to validate that information. And then it's also a competitive process. Again, all the trade work is competitively bid in an open, fair process. And so that is ultimately the real process that will ensure that the taxpayers are getting the value for the dollar.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I just a quick comment. I have had all along as well a lot of concern about the routing and what the vibration as well as the aesthetics would mean for using University Avenue and just coming right up literally to the Capitol. But we were quite frankly, in my opinion, stonewalled by the Met Council in terms of trying to get any discussion going about alternatives. They kept telling us we were locked in and the timelines were against us and we couldn't make any changes. So I found that to be rather frustrating. But I did have a couple of questions, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the budget here on page 54, and you reference $2 million for moving and $20 million for swing space. And if you could talk a little bit about where that swing space is going to be. We're talking about 10% of the cost of the total project for moving and swing space. So where would they be located?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that the options, we first looked at what buildings do we have that are adjacent to the Capitol building, state-owned facilities that potentially would be good candidates, starting with the state office building, and what space do we have in here. The one space that was identified as the cafeteria area as a potential remodel, either for hearing room space or as for workstations. We've also looked at this at the department and the admin building. Obviously, we have the tunnel connection to the Capitol building, and that would require us to relocate existing divisions within the Department of Administration to other locations, whether it be down at the Centennial Office Building or into leased facilities. But that is a strategy. Obviously, we have to make sure that the House and Senate can function during the restoration work. And a key part of that's going to be the chambers, and are we able to keep them open and available for each of the sessions throughout the project. We don't know that yet. We won't know that until the construction management firm is on board. If we did have to look for space to hold the floor sessions, we'd obviously be looking at more than likely a leased facility for that type of work. In those cases, this swing space number was only identified for state-owned facilities. So if it's not needed for that purpose, if we don't have to do any major remodeling to accommodate the temporary tenants from the Capitol building, then that money doesn't get spent.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, just as a follow-up then on the swing space, when you reference this building, and some of us have felt that you know, there's major work that's needed in this building as well. So if you were remodeling part of this building using some of that $20 million, what kind of remodeling would that consist of? Would that be just doing minimal work to make things temporarily functional, or would they be doing a reasonably good job with that investment so that that would be quality space moving into the future after the Capitol was done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, you would want to think about and hopefully be able to identify what's going to be the use after people would move back into the Capitol building. Obviously, the main goal with the first goal is to meet the functional requirements of the people that are going to be in that space. But long term, you'd want to not have to redo that space again for the next tenant that comes along. Again, that'll be determined as we go through the design process. On what's the scope of that work. I would say to your comment, though, it isn't intended to do asset preservation. It's not intended to fix up air handling units, replace air handling units, or do roof repairs or window replacement. It really is the build-out of the space to meet the functional requirements.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that wasn't the direction I was going, although I think some of those issues at some point need to be addressed in this building. But there are different ways that you can design and use space temporarily. And if we're investing what appears to be potentially millions of dollars wherever that investment is going, my point is that up front, then there should be some discussion about doing that in a way where it's quality space so that when it's used long-term, for whatever purpose, it's well done so that we don't have to go back in and tear it out and eventually redo it when the state office building or other facilities that you might use that you reference. Has there been any look, and I probably shouldn't be the one to raise this question because another member raised it, but being I'm talking about swing space, about the Ford building?
Mr. Wozlowski.
Mr. Chair, that's, as you know, a constant discussion point on what should happen to the Ford building and is it a viable in 2007 when they were looking, 2008 when they were looking at restoration, that was an identified space. Estimates for to be able to occupy that space are somewhere between $22 to $25 million of investment that would be needed for that building. And again, that would become the same type of question is then what's the long-term plan for use of that building? How does that space lay out to meet the functional requirements that you have for whatever agency or program would move into that space? Well, you'd have to evaluate that on a cost basis. Does it make sense to remodel that building versus your other alternatives?
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, only ask these questions because there's $22 million on the table, counting the moving cost at $2 million and then $20 million for swing space. And that's quite a price tag. And just would want to know up front that whatever that ultimate plan is, then that money is being well spent so that we get some long-term benefit from that as opposed to just temporary while the capital is under construction. And maybe, Mr. Chairman, as the author of the bill, that could be, from your part, a continuing discussion so that that component is well spent. Mr. Chairman, I do have a procedural question, but do you want to wait on those until we're done with the questions?
If it's a short question, you could ask it right now.
Well, you referenced referring it to Ways and Means, and in the amendment here, there's reference to the legacy funding division or that part of the budget putting dollars in, as I understand it, to pay the debt service on the $20 million.
Representative Carlson, there's no mention of legacy in my bill.
Is it this DE1 amendment? Is this what's going to be moving
Carlson,
forward?
Representative Carlson, we haven't discussed the DE amendment yet. That is an amendment being offered by someone else. We are on 2754.
Okay, so this is, okay, then whenever that's offered.
2754 is silent on that aspect.
Okay, so I guess I was jumping to a conclusion. I thought this might have been an author's amendment, but thank you.
It's not an author's amendment. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have some discussion about the swing space issue. At several times first of all, I'll point out that the House was very much more cooperative than the Senate when this building was being redone. We all moved, not exactly happily, but we moved over to Mechanics Arts Building and we did survive there so that everything was cleared out and this building could be done in fairly record time. I understand the Senate is fairly reluctant about moving out of the Capitol, but I don't know what will, but one of the things that I've suggested for several years, and I know the commissioner and I are at odds on this because he wants to tear the building down, and that's the use of the Ford building across University Avenue for swing space. That's a really important historical building. They're about the Ford company. Cars used to be made there, actually, on those two stories. There are about 70 of those buildings in the country, and I don't believe one of them has been torn down. If we were to tear this down, as the commissioner suggested that we do, fortunately the governor did not follow up on his suggestion. That would be the first one to come down under these circumstances. But it's that building has a connection by tunnel to the state office building. When I'm told that they're looking at possibly using parts of the administration building as swing space. And I'll point out, I don't know how much exercise senators like to get, but this building is only about 1.5 blocks past the administration building, and I think there could be some arrangement. But it is a terrific building. It's a historically important building, and I think that we ought to be able to use it for something much better than a planned parking lot. So,
well, Representative Conniff, if,
just put that on the table.
If, with regard to the swing space and moving costs, if you'll notice in the bill, it does say that the House and Senate floors can only be closed for one session during an even-numbered year, so we're not doing it in a budget year. But in my conversations with the architect, he has told me, and I believe he's told Mr. Wazlowski and the governor, that he thinks we can do it without closing either the House or the Senate floor, and I'm convinced he can, and that would be even more discussion of ways and means on the floor. And bear in mind, too, that admin, the state of Minnesota, own the building. We are the owners. Contractors have to do what the owners want in a timely manner and in the way we want. Representative Kahn.
Yeah. Well, I think the question is, you know, that would be very good if we didn't have to close off the floors for one time, or could close them off one at a time. We've done that. I remembered a session when we did meet. The House did meet in the Senate during that period of time. But the critical thing, the thing that takes up more time, at least, if not importance, is offices and hearing room space and that kind of thing. And the idea, this isn't the first state building we're going to redo. The idea of having swing space attached to the Capitol for any kind of building renovation we do, or something that's very accessible for anyone who needs access to the Capitol, I think is something that we should look at. And while we're talking about the, I haven't looked at this in detail, but something that has been brought to my attention, and I understand it's all administration's fault, and I haven't gotten to the people yet, is the total absence of bicycle racks around the state office building, the Capitol, and the DOT. So since you're sitting, I know it's not totally related to this, but we could have historically accurate bicycle racks added to the outside of that. So,
Representative Kahn, I can assure you that that money will come out of the Heritage Fund. we have Representatives Scalzi, Hausman, Clark, and Drazkowski, and after Drazkowski, I would like to either find out who offered the amendment, who's going to offer it, and then we will proceed to a vote. So, Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding the Ford building, which I think is something that we should have been using for quite some time. I'm wondering, what is the how is the tunnel going to be affected by the ditch where the light rail transit is going to?
Mr. Wazlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, the Met Council is putting in structural supports to protect that tunnel, so the rail tracks will go over those structural supports, so that tunnel will stay in place and operational.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you. And then regarding canceling unspent funds, I think it was last year, we saw some bills to kind of take away all the money that hadn't been spent in past bond issues and save that money as a part of, as a piece of balancing the budget. And as Chair Howes has said, future legislatures can do whatever they want to do. So is this, and in my estimation, what we should be doing is just bonding for what we need for the next phase, for the first phase. In my mind, that's all we need to bond. But is this, maybe you can remind the committee how the automatic cancellation of unspent funds works. And then also the second part would be, is this properly sectioned and scheduled so that if another legislature comes in and takes away any unspent funds, will we be whole? Will we be okay in this process?
Mr. Wazlowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Caldy, the dollar amounts that you see in the master plan were based on the sequencing of the work, and it's really based on two things. One, it's the cash flow required to pay the bills, but it's also when are you going to incur the obligation. Obviously, the state, part of our requirements is that we encumber the money before we incur an obligation, and that gets back to the delivery method of CM at risk. We're not entering into a contract for construction of the entire project up front. it happens in phases over time as you sequence the work. The idea we view the chair's approach of a single appropriation for the full amount and then phasing when those appropriations are available, it does two things. One, it allows the work to progress in an orderly manner, an efficient manner, a cost-effective manner. But it also reduces the risk that a future legislature or governor, for that matter, would change their mind and stop halfway in the project. This project, you're not going to be able to stop halfway and then still have a functioning Capitol building. It's not being sequenced in that. You will have a building that's half restored, and it will look like it's half restored.
And Representative Scalzi, the life of the each bond year the clock doesn't start until it's enacted. So it would take a long time for the last $41 million to be canceled. Following Representative Scalzi.
Mr. Chair, that was my question. If we're going 60, 60, 60, and 41, and we're assuming that we can do a certain amount of work for 60, as I understand the Senate bill has like 50 in it. So I'm assuming, and I might be wrong, you might want to correct me on that. I'm assuming that you could do a good amount of work for $60 million, maybe in some of the heating and ventilation. I don't know. I mean, you don't have to close the entire Capitol to do one section of work. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Weslowski. Scalzi, I would answer it this way. The mechanical and electrical systems are intended to be, even though there's going to be separate air handling units serving different areas, it's going to be an interconnected system. You're going to be, you think of it running air vertically as well as horizontally throughout the building. So it's not being partitioned so that the east wing is a completely separate, independently operated building from a telecommunications and HVAC standpoint. It's going to be an interconnected system. So the overall design and a lot of the upfront cost is you're going to do the whole design upfront. So it's designed as one system so everything works together in an efficient manner. That's a significant part of that upfront cost, as well as getting the other professionals on board, getting the construction management firm under contract. The first sequence of work is intended to be both in the basement area and in the attic area. You're going to be bringing in air handling units in the basement that will serve the ground and first floor. You'll be putting air handling units up in the attic to serve the third and second floors. So that how this funding gets sequenced is really important for having an interconnected system that functions as one system instead of three or four separate systems once you're completed.
Representative Scalzi.
So then for the first $60 million, I mean, there's a reason you say 60, 60, 60, 41. So that was what I was getting at, is what's coming in that first 60?
Mr. Chair, and I think Representative Scalzi, the chairman, I think, asked us to give a detailed breakdown of what's in those different phases, and we'll certainly do that.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have this kind of timing concern because I know you want to vote on this today and you want to vote on your bonding bill tomorrow, and they are related. And what I don't see in their presentation are the pieces that this committee will ultimately have to talk about, and that is how we pay for it. I think we've kind of moved beyond the point where we feel we're going to do this, but how do we pay for it? And unless I am mistaken, you just handed out the comprehensive master plan. That's all you have. And so there are two pieces of information the committee doesn't have as a result. One is from the January meeting of the commission. And at the time, The architect made three proposals, bonding option one, bonding option two, bonding option three. And if there were interest, I could quickly copy these because I brought this. But bonding option one was we appropriate the entire amount. The second one was we do it in two different bills. And the third one was we do it in three different bills. That seems to have disappeared. And yesterday, the architect made a presentation to the Senate, which is quite different from the presentation we're getting today. But it ended with a sheet that says an appropriation of $241 million allocated as follows. And then they've got a 2013, 14, 15, 16. The idea of three bonding options sort of disappeared from January, and I'm not sure why. And this idea of this single appropriation with four allocations has substituted. And I don't know if it would be helpful for the committee to get copies of those two, just to see how they had proposed paying for it at some point. I could have him make copies in our final minutes. But anyway, that aside, to my point, I see labor here. And I think labor would care very much that we actually spend the money that we're voting for bonding. We actually spend it, that it's able to be spent quickly. If we appropriate the entire amount, 241, if you just look at the project length, some of this will go so long that it would actually automatically cancel. Authorized bonding, well, I checked with MMB. And authorized bonding automatically cancels in 4 years unless we reauthorize. That's how we get rid of old stuff. And so the question I would have is, why do we want to appropriate the entire amount? Because of its impact. It affects how much we are able to do for all other state infrastructure, higher education, transportation, wastewater infrastructure. It affects everything else, because that's what we'll hear tomorrow. The reason tomorrow's bill has to be so small is because this total amount gets us to that $500 million, which I think is the amount that you're sort of working with, and yet none of this can be spent. And it strikes me as just not a smart way to use bonding authority when we have other options. And because in January, the people who proposed this, this came from the architect, they had three bonding options. And one of them, which I still think makes the most sense, is that the first year, when all you can really do is consultant services, the pre-design design, it's the smallest amount, that would be the wise thing to do, to break it up into 3 years. And they have provided that as an alternative. And then the next few years we authorize the larger ones. So, I mean, it does seem that this committee ultimately, we're getting the presentation of the details, the weeds, but the big question this committee has to ask is, how much do we want to bond for this, and how much do we want to bond for it this year? How much should be in this year's bonding authority? Because you want to vote on this today, it just seems to me that piece requires a little bit of conversation on our parts before we get to the point of voting on the entire amount.
Representative Hausman, the bill you're referring to in the Senate, I believe, is Senator Ortman's bill, which is a lot different than the bill I have here today. And then if you read on lines 1.17 through 1.21, it specifies that the timing of, you can read it, the appropriation subdivision cancels, yes, specified, blah, 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 except that the Commissioner of Management and Budget shall count the start of authorization for issuance of state bonds as the first day of the fiscal year during which amount of the appropriation is specified, and not the date of enactment. So just because the bill is enacted, let's say the bill were enacted today, doesn't affect the future payments, not until the money is borrowed. So the cancellation aspect really won't come into play because it'll be at least 7-8 years before we get to the final cancellation. And I've chosen, with advice from many members, not I didn't make this decision myself, and in consulting with the governor and the administration and the architect, to go for the full package, to commit the legislature to restoring the Capitol. As you know, we've discussed repairing the Capitol. We've spent money on it. We've spent money on plans, committees, commissions. And I just believe, with other people, and so does the governor, that it's time to commit the state of Minnesota to restoring the Capitol. And that's what I would like to vote on today. Doing something differently isn't out of the question. That can be brought up in Ways and Means. More discussion can be had with members. We can discuss it on the floor. The governor can also weigh in. In fact, I would like his second opinion to verify that. And then I believe the commissioner, Mr. Waslowski, had an answer to one of your points there. One of you were nodding your head.
Chair, if I could just pick up that conversation with you. I'm going to vote yes today because I want it to be clear that I'm committed to the Capitol. But tomorrow, we're going to see a very small bill. And it's very small because of the decision we're making today. That's the connection. And there are a lot of people, I suspect, sitting here who have seen that spreadsheet and who have some frustration about that because it is so small and because particularly in areas that we've always put high priority on, higher education being one, wastewater infrastructure, transportation, everything is affected by the decision we make today. I'll tell you, if it were up to me, we would do a significant bonding bill, and we'd say, this is on top of that, because just as you say, we're not going to spend a lot of this for a lot of years. A lot of years. That would be my preference, that we all say, since we're not going to spend this, this goes on top of what we need for infrastructure. But I think that choice isn't going to be available to us tomorrow. And that's the reason for my again, raising the question about doing this incrementally.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to remind everyone in this room and around this table that we had almost a $500 million bonding bill last year in a non-bonding year. So we have to look at the total of what was spent last year in addition to what we're voting on today and tomorrow. It's a pretty sizable amount, folks, to put on the state's credit card.
And Representative Hausman, you mentioned that if it was up to you, you'd do a certain way, and that you're not able to make that decision. Neither am I, Representative Hausman. Leadership, working with the governor, will make that decision. But for now, I want to move forward with this. It's easier to take money away from this than it is to add money to it. This commits us to it. We'll do the other bill tomorrow. And as they travel their separate ways, they might meet at the pass. I don't know. Representative Carlson, is it to this point? Because I still have two more people that wanted to talk.
Well, yes, it is. Unless I don't want to interrupt, no. Representative Hausman.
Okay,
but
Representative Carlson.
It is to the point of to the size of the bill and how it relates to tomorrow. And when we pass this one out without phasing it, and I want to point out, Mr. Chairman, that in the past we have phased some very major projects. A couple that come to mind was the Mayo Tower at the University of Minnesota, and we did that literally a few floors at a time. And I don't know what the square footage is, but it must rival the Capitol in terms of square footage. It's a very big building. It's part of the health science complex, if people are not familiar with the Mayo. I don't know how the HVAC may have entered in on that particular one, but it certainly was phased. Another big one at the University of Minnesota, not as big as the Mayo, but was Falwell Hall, and we phased that one, and that was a building built in the 1890s in terms of age of the relative to the Capitol. I have to assume that there must have been major HVAC done at Falwell Hall, and that's one of the largest classroom buildings on the University of Minnesota campus. So phasing, at least on the face of it here, seems to make good sense if it's going to mean that full funding is going to drive down the other projects to a smaller number. But, Mr. Chairman, the we have in the forecast, there's enough there for a $750 million bonding bill. In fact, in Ways and Means last night, we had a little discussion about that because I did ask the chair if targets had been given out to the various divisions. And she implied that, well, things were pretty well done. And I said, well, there are some other fiscal bills going through, not the least of which was the bonding bill. And so the question that I have either right now or before we vote is, have you been given a target? You know, there are really two numbers that we have to think about. There's the forecast number at $750 million, and then there's the money that's appropriated for debt service. And the chair last night implied that there was as much as $5 million there for debt service, but indicated that the number could be somewhat less than that. She said something like it could be $3 million, it could be $4 million, but there's five that's available. So my question is, so that the committee on both sides of the aisle has some feeling for what we're working with relative to the debt service number, you know, what have you or have you not been told? Because that would certainly help us decide what we can move out of the committee with, if we have the full $5 million and the $750 million, or if we're some number less than that.
Representative Carlson, I have the authority to move $20 million today on House File 2754, and tomorrow I have the authority to move $280 million, and I believe it's $330,000, somewhere in that ballpark. I can't remember the House File number. I have authority to do that tomorrow. That's the extent of my authority.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, then, you know, from my perspective, then there's still, at least in the forecast and in the debt service, $250 that would remain that could be used if you got that authorization.
Representative Carlson, there's, according to the new Pawlenty formula, as some people call it, there is more money, more debt service available, more capacity. But at this point in time, the authority that I told you I had is that's the authority I have today. And I'll have that tomorrow. And I would assume it'll be the same in Ways and Means. And on the House floor, I don't know if it will change at some point in time. But you've been here, Representative Carlson, longer than I have. And you know that things do change, sometimes for the good, sometimes not so good. So until that time arrives, we're going to move this at 221 and a bill tomorrow for 280, and we will see what happens in the near and long-term future. And we have to move a little quicker for Representative Clark, and then Representative Drazkowski will be the last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief, and I'm not sure who this question is for. I was looking for someone from the Historical Society who might have answered the question I have, but I guess I'll start with you, and maybe we can make this short. About, I think it's maybe 12 or 14 years ago, there were a number of us who raised some issues about the historical accuracy and historical inclusiveness of the art in the Capitol. And there was quite a bit of work done on it. There was a committee that was formed that included legislators and looked at the issues of the art in the Capitol. And I see that in the budget here, in the document, it says the artwork, including both new and restored works of art belonging to the state, are part of what is accounted for in here. And I also see there's quite a impressive statement that says, you know, some understanding about the value of the art, the public art conveys the values of a community. And so I'm wondering what kind of process there is in place to make sure that, especially if there is new art or even historical accuracy, Representative Fabian, maybe you and I could have some conversation about this. I mean, there are things in that Capitol, I think titles that have been imposed on pieces of art that are ridiculous, you know, like Father Hennepin discovers St. Anthony Falls. Well, exactly discover it. I mean, there, and I'm sure that was even the artist's rendition of what was supposed to be there. So I'm just wondering, in terms of the inclusiveness of our community and making sure that the art really does convey our values, what is the process that's been set forward to do this? And if there hasn't yet been one, maybe some of us here might be interested in helping work with you on that.
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, that is the...
Clark.
Excuse me, sorry.
Okay.
That will follow a similar process as the security issue. There will be a separate working group that is formed, and it will be led by the Historical Society that will evaluate what art should be located in the Capitol building. And as you mentioned, a lot of that work has already been done. Part of the budget is a historic structures report. This is, when you're dealing with a monumental building like this, the National Park Service recommends starting with a historic structures report. And that is not only the physical attributes of the building, but it's also about the art that's in the building. So that is intended to be a research process that identifies and evaluates what art should be in the process. But there will be a working group led by the Historical Society, working with the historic preservation consultant that will be part of the design team to make those determinations.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just end by saying, you know, maybe you could consider having some legislators work with you on that, too.
Thank you.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wislowski, back to the swing space again. Have you considered any temporary housing for folks? What is there, 300 people in the Capitol, something like that? I don't know what the number is. I know that there are schools that bring in entire mobile classrooms and are able to, there are mobile offices, other things. It would be much more cost effective, I would expect, than building a new building. Any comments on that?
Mr.
Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's the answer is twofold. Yes, I think you have to, first of all, I would say the conversations with the existing tenants in the building, everybody acknowledges that this is not going to be a Class A space that they're moving into on a temporary basis. They're all willing to live with inconvenience, and I would start with the governor, who said, you know, at the State of the State, about being willing to move out of the building to facilitate the restoration. I think everybody has the expectation. It gets to Representative Carlson's point on if there's a long-term plan, that there's another group that can logically follow in to utilize that space without major renovations, then maybe you do make a upfront commitment to do it one time and have a longer term use. But I think all those options, and certainly cost is going to be a significant factor that of what's the lowest cost option for space.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Wislowski. So have you put together an estimate on what that would be? Certainly, if the governor would like, I'm glad to, if they send me back here, give him my office, and I'll take a sleeping bag out in the portable thing if we need to do that. But have you looked at anything like that? Have you put an estimate together on what portable units would be?
Mr. Wislowski.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've not put any estimates together on portable.
Representative Wislowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're able to, Mr. Wislowski, I think that might be helpful to the cause. I just would like to, Mr. Chair, comment on the discussion that happened earlier. It seems that there is developing a notion that there is virtue in spending money, regardless of what the means is. I guess I'd like to just remind members that every dollar that is bonded for is repaid through extraction of dollars from the private sector that would otherwise be engaged in hiring and keeping the private sector in Minnesota going. So I don't think we look at the number and suggest that we need to spend as much as we can. We need to look at the projects that are important to our state, the things we have to do, and those are the, rather the decisions that we should base them on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair renews his motion that House File 2754, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wondered if we got a rebuttal to Representative Briscoe.
I'd appreciate it if you didn't, but well, go ahead.
I won't, Mr. Chair, but if I'm not mistaken, the individual income tax is the biggest amount, and I, as a taxpayer, would like to see my money used, as I'm sure many people at this table, to be used for funding our higher education institutions. The business partnership and the Chamber of Commerce are constantly talking about the need to educate our children, need to educate the new workforce we need for the future. And that doesn't happen without dollars. So, Representative Esposito, we can get in a good argument and back and forth. By the way, since you're bringing a sleeping bag out, we can go camping together too, but later on maybe. But, you know, it's just not true that it's the business community paying for all this. It's our citizens, many of whom support a huge number of projects that have been brought forth by all of us, and including you and me. And Mr. Chair, I just to represent Scott, you know, I've been here 26 years, not as long as Representative Kahn or Representative Clark or Representative Carlson, who has been here so long that I can't even remember his name, but you know, I think I'm fourth around the table, and there are many years, Representative Scott, where we've had huge bonding bills, much bigger than what we're talking about, the $1 billion. But I think the point all of us here are trying to make is that this capital is important, and it should not be part of the bonding bill, because it's something we should have been taking care of and will be taking care of for years in the future. And I think the chair shares our frustration with that, and we'll see how it progresses. But this should not, this is a huge expense that I think, if you put out a poll out there, and you guys are, there's a bunch of polls over there, I might add, but Drazkowski, Swidzinski, Lozluski. But anyway, you know, if you put out a poll, you'd see huge support for financing the, you know, restructuring of the capital, however you want to word it. So,
saving
the capital, whatever. So with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm done.
Representative Drazkowski.
Chair, I'd like to, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE-1 amendment.
I'm shocked.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, the DE-1 amendment, the one part that has been left out of the Chair's bill is a $20 million for arts and fixtures in the building, and that's not accounted for or decided exactly how that would be financed, is my understanding. So, members, the DE-1 amendment simply adds $20 million to the top, to line 1.4 there, and then requires that that $20 million be paid with dollars from the arts and cultural heritage from the legacy funds when those debt service payments are due. That would be handled by our staff in MMB, as I understand it. And so I'd encourage your consideration of the amendment.
Representative Drazkowski, while I support a little bit of what you're doing, this turns this ship from Ways and Means to the Heritage Committee, and I do not want to make that journey. I want this to go to the Committee on Ways and Means, so I would oppose your amendment, although there is some worthiness to it. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you for discussing it, Mr. Chair. I'd withdraw the amendment and look forward to having future discussions.
Chair renews his motion that House File 2754 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Committee is adjourned.